Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
If James Madison or Thomas Jefferson were to come back to the United States, their first response would be, what is the Department of Health and Human Services, and what gives it the authority to tell an order of nuns that they have to provide coverage for contraception in their health care plan?
God deeply, dearly, profoundly loves every single human being. To entertain racist thoughts is to be anti-love, to be anti-God and anti-truth.
You can hear the same sort of, oh, the worst sort of sin is to judge or to be self-righteous. Well, guess what? That's what the whole world thinks is the worst sin. These are the prophets of our age, and they must be condemned.
I'm Vicky.
And I'm Ron from Ontario, Canada.
Confessional Lutherans who play in German polka bands, love issues, etc.
We hear about them all the time in the Old Testament, especially the early part of the Old Testament, and they appear occasionally in the New Testament. The Syrophoenician woman, the Canaanite woman, encounters Jesus on the road. Who were the Canaanites? And recently, one of their ritual halls has been discovered as an archaeological site in Israel. We're going to be talking about that very discovery with Dr. Craig Evans. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Live on this Friday afternoon, August the 25th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After our conversation with Dr. Evans, Dr. Paul Kengor will join us answering the question, will Hillary Clinton become a Methodist pastor? She's expressed a desire to preach. Pastor Chris Roseborough joins us after that for This Week in Pop American Christianity. We'll go over some solar eclipse prophecies that were made and probably failed. We'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week, and then we'll review the movie Annabelle Creation. You can vote in advance for Issues Etc. soundbite of the week by giving us a call, 1-877-623-6943, sending us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or vote at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us to talk about a reported discovery of a Canaanite ritual hall in Israel, Dr. Craig Evans, distinguished professor of Christian origins and dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University. He's author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. Dr. Evans, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd. Good to be back with you.
Are you familiar with this particular site?
Yes, I am. I've been there. It is a difficult site. I was in an SUV, and I thought we'd have no trouble driving up the dirt road, and the vehicle was actually damaged by the time we got up to the site. So this is not an easy site to visit. I saw the biggest and fastest moving snake in my life when we were leaving the site. It just creeped me out. It's rocky. It's covered with some scrub brush, lots of thorns. There are scorpions and snakes, and I mean, this is not for the faint of heart. It's a large area. They're excavating an area. It looks to me like, probably a couple of acres. And that's just scratching the surface. There are several different loci where they're working, and I am as pleased as can be to hear of their recent discovery. And this is what makes archaeology and all that hard work so well done. And it's got a great team, too. The director is Yitzhak Shai from Ariel University. He's assisted by Dr. Amit Dagan from the Beit Berl College, Sheila Gulenberg of the Israel College of the Bible in Netanya, and several others. People who are experts on ancient life, you know, because you find bones, you try to determine what people eat and that sort of thing. And that's why there's no question that this is a Canaanite village prior to the people of Israel conquering the land and establishing themselves. It dates to about 1200 BC, so that'd be about 200 years before David conquered and established Jerusalem as the Israelite capital. This place is mostly to the west, a little bit south, several miles of Jerusalem. And that's where it is, and it's in rugged country, as I said.
So this ritual hall, as it's being reported in the press, What is it they believe that they've discovered there? What would this structure or set of structures have been used for?
Well, it has a cultic purpose, and it's not exactly a temple, although that, who knows, as they continue to excavate, but it appears to be some kind of a ritual center, and there are ritual items that have been found, ceramic masks, for example, and other tools that would be used in Canaanite pagan practices. And what's exciting about that is that the Old Testament, from time to time, at various places, the prophets, but also in Joshua, Judges, Samuel, Kings, in the narratives, you'll get references to some of these places and abominable practices, things that God finds very offensive and so forth. And so what this does is it helps us recognize what the prophets or what the narrator of these biblical stories, what they're talking about, and we can actually see them and look at them, and it becomes very easy to envision what's going on, and we realize, you know, there's a competing culture here. It isn't just the people of Israel who believe in one God. You've got this competing culture that is saying to the Israelites, hey, why don't you believe in our gods too, and we can become good friends. And so you can now you can see it. You know, it's not just words, old stories, but objects that you can hold in your hands and look at.
Who were the Canaanites, and how would you describe their religious practices as we have them both in archaeology and from biblical depictions?
Well, as far as we can tell, the Canaanites, they were not an exceedingly wicked people. They weren't the worst people in the world, but they were polytheists. They had their gods, and in their earlier history, as far as we can tell, they would sometimes indulge in child sacrifice, and right there in the vicinity of what becomes Jerusalem later. And of course, that would be considered a, you know, a particularly deplorable and justification for driving them out, overpowering them, and displacing them from the land. So we know some of those things like that. They ate dogs. They ate pigs, you know. In other words, they didn't eat like the Jewish people. They didn't observe kosher food laws, of course. And that's how we are able, usually, to distinguish a Canaanite or Philistine village from a Jewish village. It's just we look at the faunal remains, and we can tell how they what kind of food they ate.
And their gods, I remember, oh, this was in graduate school, after seminary education, taking Ugaritic, which was one of these proto-languages of Hebrew, and one of the texts that we were supposed to read was Canaanite Myths and Legends. It wasn't actually printed in Ugaritic, it was printed transliterated, but I remember reading some about these gods. They were very human in a lot of ways. They were very flawed gods. How would you describe their pantheon?
Yeah, I agree with that. Are you referring to S.R. Driver's famous book?
I am.
Yeah, and I've read that too, and actually that's a, you know, that Todd, that's a very interesting observation, because the gods tend to be that way, not just the Canaanite gods and other gods of the Middle East, but the gods of the Greeks and the Romans. They're basically like the Hollywood crowd. They're just people. They just happen to have powers. Most of them are immortal, and they act like very sinful human beings, really. And that explains why, and when I was a student, like yourself, I was always puzzled, if these people are so religious, why are they so immoral? That always struck me as strange. But after doing this kind of study for years, I realized, well, the reason these people are immoral is because the gods they worship and try to placate and try to bribe, they're immoral also. And this is where Yahweh, the God of the Old Testament, is so different. That's why he says, you're to be like me. I am holy, and you're supposed to be holy. You're not supposed to be like these other gods. You're not supposed to be like these other cultures. And that gave me a greater appreciation. It isn't just a contest between monotheism on the one hand and polytheism on the other, as if, well, what's the harm there? It's that these polytheistic deities of these societies, they're immoral beings. They're hardly a models to model one's own life after. So it's a profound difference. And yet, it's a common feature. It seems like wherever you have polytheism, you have cultures, you have this fractured understanding of God where he's splintered up into all these different beings and all the superstition that goes with it, you always have a lowering of ethical and moral standards as well.
The child sacrifice that is hinted at and described in the Bible among the Canaanites, how does it get to that point in these pagan practices where they are sacrificing children? What are they seeking through this brutal ritual?
Well, again, I think you have it's a perverse parallel, but it is a parallel to the biblical teaching that estrangement from God, sin and estrangement from God, ultimately requires a price to be paid. And so the beauty of the Abraham story, see, shows that shift. Abraham is commanded to offer up and sacrifice Isaac, and then God intervenes and says, no, don't harm him. I'll supply the ram. I'll supply the sacrifice. And so I think that really is a proto-evangelium. It's a foreshadowing of the gospel where God provides his own son. And so even in the pagan world, there's the recognition that a sacrifice of some kind is required because humanity is estranged from the divine. They just don't know how to go about it exactly. And so child sacrifice and that kind of thing, as well as animal sacrifice, is what's undertaken to try to somehow restore balance and restore harmony in a spiritual sense. And so that's humanity. That's our world. We have this God consciousness. We may give expression to it in ways that are right, but we may give expression to it in ways that are perverse.
So finally, this site that is now being combed over by archaeologists and looked at, identified as some sort of a ritual complex, what would excite you most to find there as a student of biblical archaeology?
I think what would excite me, like this very find, where you recover the remains of human culture that then intersect with biblical narrative, and you realize, oh, we have found a place. This is probably, by the way, the place called Libna, which gets, once it becomes Judaized, it becomes Libna, which is referenced in Joshua 21:13. And I think it's that connection between the biblical narrative and the very ground you're standing on. You realize, wow, these things happened right here. I'm standing at the very site, and the pottery, the bones, the tools, whatever it is that I've unearthed, these things were utilized. They belong to the people who lived here 3,000 years ago in the biblical period. And so it's like an intersection. It's like in the time machine, an intersection between the past and the present. And I've seen the look on the faces of students, volunteer diggers, there they are, and they hold something in their hand, and they realize, wow, this coin or this seal or this jar, whatever we're talking about, was placed here or dropped in the ground 3,000 years ago, and I'm the first person to see it and touch it since then. And that is exciting.
Dr. Craig Evans is Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University. He's author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. You can purchase it under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Evans, thank you for your time.
You're most welcome.
On the other side of the break, Dr. Paul Kengor joins us, author of several books, including God and Hillary Clinton, A Spiritual Life. There's been some news that Hillary Clinton has expressed a desire to preach. She's a member of the United Methodist Church, a close relationship with several clergymen throughout her political career. We're going to talk about whether or not she might become a pastor. Stay tuned.
Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit memoriapressacademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We would like to overlook the difficulty of daily repentance and death to our sins in the interest of progressing to a more advanced spirituality.
Rebecca Curtis from her new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Somehow, spiritual advancement always amounts to our getting to spend more time on the things we like and calling it stewardship or service.
You can purchase and download an audio version of Ladylike, Living Biblically at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Ladylike, Living Biblically by Rebecca Curtis and Rose Adel.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. Issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.